NBA basketball fans, welcome back to the NBA Playoff Banter Podcast. He's Marshall. I'm Chris. And we're here to discuss banter, like the title says, predict, go back and forth on the NBA Finals. We're going to start the show wrapping up quickly, or somewhat quickly anyway, the series that we just got out of Saturday night. The Bucks take it back to back, which was kind of surprising, especially Trae Young returning game six. But back-to-back games, they looked good. They got the job done, and they moved on. And there was a rumor out there that Giannis was cleared to go game seven. Obviously, you have a different mentality when it comes to the potentially last game of your season. But I think that's a good sign either way. It was a rumor. It was a report. But it came from a pretty good source. So we're going to break down that Bucks-Hawks series. Atlanta kind of just struggled down the stretch there. Didn't quite get over the hump in general, whereas a variety of the role players that we spoke of, which side is going to step up? And the more experienced role players stepped up and closed out the game. Middleton was dynamic, but just in general, they really did. And then, of course, you know, we're going to talk, preview, and predict, break down this series that starts tomorrow night, 8 o'clock Central. Phoenix, this is going to be fun, man. Phoenix has never won one, and it's been since, what, 71 or 74? What was it? When Milwaukee won. And it's funny, you look outside of that Milwaukee arena, and that crowd, every game got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. It's always fun when you get those outdoor looks. You know, just relating it to the Timberwolves, I try to, you know, the Timberwolves are never in the postseason, so I try to find a way to get them in. And we could never do that unless they, because of where the Target Center is, it's like right on the road, right on a major part of the downtown part. So we could never really do that there. I think they could do it if they did it. There's a lot of open space by the Viking Stadium. They could set up a screen and do that there. But you got to get deep into the playoffs to get there. So we're going to, like I said, break down, you know, some of the matchups. Really, really interesting matchup here, especially, knock on wood, if Giannis is back. If this is your first time listening to the NBA Playoff Banter Podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadope radio. You don't have to go to Blog Talk and Rope It Dope and download the show directly there or listen to the browser. If you don't want, you can find the platform Rope It Dope Radio Podcast on iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spreaker, really across the board. We're also part of the Grilling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found in a whole lot of places. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegrillingtruth.com. It's basketball, football, boxing, baseball, hockey, everything in between. And one more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord you have, you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV. The plans start as low as $69.99 a month. Simple pricing, no hidden fees, no annual contract. You can stream it anywhere on any device. They do have the cloud DVR available. And right now, you sign up for the choice package and above, you get a free year of HBO Max. And they're starting to put out some pretty good content, new content out on that HBO Max, by the way. That's AT&T TV. Okay, so real quick, you know, out of game six, you know, Bogdanovich had seven threes. He went for 28. Lou Williams had a pretty good game. Collins was solid. Gallinari off the bench. It's not that they didn't play all that bad or anything like that in that game, but, man, when you look at some of these numbers, too, from that game, Brooke Lopez, 33.7 boards. Four blocks, 14 of 18. Bobby Portis was a guy that kind of stood up there. We know he's pretty solid defensively. 22 points, 8 boards, 3 assists, 3 steals. Holiday, 25, 13 assists. Middleton, 26 and 13, 8 assists. I mean, wow. They really showed up even more than I would have thought. But then you get – that's game five, I should say. Game six, all of a sudden, you know, I was like, okay, you know, you hear the news that, you know, Trey Young's back and maybe he's feeling, you know, good enough. And who knows? You know what I mean? Who knows what will happen? He came back and struggled 4-17, didn't hit a three. And overall, you know, they struggled from the field, not from the three. They actually shot the three pretty good, but they struggled from the field. And, you know, a Holiday showed up, you know, Lopez was pretty solid. There's still a lot of good things from it, right? But man, the key part to it was Middleton. In that third quarter, I think there was a moment there where I think it was Herter who struggled this series from three overall, not like in the first two. He had an open look at a three-pointer and he missed it, and that would have given Atlanta their first lead. And boom, it rimmed out. And next thing you know, 13 points in a row. I think it was 13 or 16. It's 60-45. That was Middleton, by the way. And they were just too much. They were too much. And when you look at, you know, sometimes it goes down in, you know, in quarters and whatnot. And really, that's what it comes down to. I mean, it was a pretty tight game, 28-24. The Bucks, 19-19. So it was all of a sudden the defense came out to play. But that 44-29, Marshall, in the third quarter, did it. What says you about how this closed out? I got to admit, especially with Trae Young coming back, I was surprised it didn't go game seven like I think both of us did call.
Yeah, I think the biggest issue just from that game, and I was kind of bouncing around some family plans, so I didn't see the whole thing. But one of my buddies did text me about, like, the Hawks might have had a better chance last night if Trae Young didn't play. And that comes to the point of where you're going against, like, every single part of your DNA as, like, Trae Young and as the head coach. But on the other hand, it's like maybe there was some truth to that, because the way that team played in game four was when Trae got hurt was, I mean, they had that place jumping. So it's the part of sports where obviously as a star player, you want to be there for your team. And as a head coach, if your star player is out there gutting it out, you want him to play. But the box score that Trae Young had in that game was not a representation of the skill he had. And I mean, if he's not hitting threes, clearly there's something wrong with him. But again, it's much easier said than done to say, hey, Trae, I know you're out here, but I got to bench you. Like, not many coaches in the NBA are going to make that move. But big picture for the team, like, it probably would have been the right near impossible I'd move to have him play the bench more and have Lou Williams maybe around the point or something. You know, it's that weird part of, like, you as an athlete feel for any sport, if I can give it my 70%, I need to go and join my boys or my girls and play my sport. But
I thought he was moving okay, though, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's
and
just,
to be fair for the series, he shot 25% from the three, so he wasn't that great from three for the whole series. Actually, his last 10 games, he shot 25% from the three.
Yeah, it's just, you know, clearly he wasn't even maybe himself, you know. But again, that's the million-dollar back and forth of, do you want to go out there and risk it, or, you know, or do you want to sit on the sidelines and watch your team? And I mean, they easily could have lost without him there either. Then you probably regret it more in the offseason.
Right, that's
of,
the thing. Because, you know, they lost the game before without him. You know what I mean? So,
they
did. Why not try, you know?
And obviously he didn't get his best effort in, which then he can look back and say, well, God, maybe they would have played better without him. You know, it's one of those things where it's a very weird part of sports where all of your natural instincts are to go out there and try it with your boys, but that doesn't always work out. Now, to flip the script a little bit, if you looked at the box scores of that game and you were seeing Atlanta at halftime, I believe three of their starting box scores were 3 of 8, 3 of 11, and 2 of 9. When three of your starting five players have 3, 2, and 3 for shots made, and all those attempted shots total close to almost 27 shots. Something's massively wrong. Like, it wasn't just Trae Young. It's that no one could hit a damn shot to save their lives. And the score at halftime, there was 90 points scored in the game. So when I saw that, I was like, man, that's kind of reminiscent of the Clippers and Suns game 5.
What do you mean 90 points in the game? Oh, like a total?
At half.
Oh, okay.
Because I think it was 47 to 43 at half.
Yeah. It was just when you said in a game, it kind of threw me off. I got you.
Oh, yeah. So which is just for those teams, the way those teams play, was very, like I said, it was a great reminder, flashback of the Suns and the Clippers game 5, second half, where, I mean, the Clippers made Paul George hit one jump shot in the fourth quarter. And that was the Clippers' only basket until like 20 seconds to go. You know, so there does come a time in playoff series where both teams have off nights. Like, these guys have had a strenuous season. Their legs are not made of, like, you know, immortal steel like LeBron's had pretty much his whole life. Like, there's times where teams get tired. But even if you're Atlanta, you got to have that little extra home energy, a little extra boost that Milwaukee had in game 5. And my biggest point as to why I thought it would for sure go 7 and why I picked Atlanta to win was because I figured role players take care of business, and I feared that Atlanta would get a head coaching edge, which neither of those occurred. But, you know, you mentioned the phenomenal game by Brook Lopez in game 5 at home.
Experience. If you look at their starters, who they play, they have a lot more playoff experience.
Mm-hmm. And I tip my cap to Milwaukee. I really thought when the news of Trae Young, and again, that was prior to knowing he wouldn't probably be his 90%, whatever. But, you know, nonetheless, Milwaukee still won. And we've seen plenty of times where just you're at home and the crowd's there. But there never really got to be that moment where the ball got rolling. As you mentioned, that 3-point shot, which could have maybe swung the whole game, that was the closest they ever got. Because Middleton went on his own little run of like over 15 points in a row. And the whole fourth quarter, I think they cut it down to like 9 and 8, like once.
Yep.
But that was like 3.5 minutes left. And that's one of those things where, you know, maybe you're trying to cover like a halftime spread, or like maybe if someone's online been betting the game, like maybe you got a chance there. But there was no real any fear ever of Milwaukee blowing that game.
Well, McGrady and Miller weren't on the floor with a $1.20 left. So that's
Yeah. So, and I mean, to wrap this up for a bow tie for Atlanta, I did have in the back of my head, I was like, you know, this team did do it against Philly a couple of times. And, they've kind of had that MO of like, this team doesn't quit. But the veteran players, as you said, Milwaukee stepped up. Atlanta's whole team had a really poor shooting night, not just Trae. The whole team shot very poorly, and it was just too much. But looking back big picture, as we kind of tie the bow for Atlanta season, dude, you went 6 games in the Eastern Conference Finals for a team that most NBA analysts and gamblers and people across the country thought you were pretty much a coin flip to beat the Knicks in round 1. So you made it to the almost the NBA Finals, and people had you as a coin flip for round 1.
Let's go back to March 1st, too, remember? They were in the 10th spot or 11th spot or whatever, you know? Just getting to the 5th spot was pretty crazy.
Yeah, so big picture, as a Hawks fan, I'm sure you're pissed off the night you lost, but you're like, dude, we've got something going here. We have a team of veterans and a team of some young kids, and this could be something good. Let's keep it together. But now to flip the script to Milwaukee, who was made fun of a lot, and then last year was really made fun of because they got their ass whooped by Miami. Now they overcame that hurdle. They got past God, why am I drawing a blank? Phil?
Nets?
No, yeah. They had the Nets thing where KD almost went Superman on them, and they had a little injury help there, but they got that done, and now you took care of Atlanta. And again, who gives a shit whether there's injuries or not? That's part of basketball. You're in the finals. Like, all the ripping on your head coach and your team not making it there, and, you know, is Giannis going to want to leave? Like, you've hopped over every hurdle. I do think for them to have a successful season, I think they've accomplished their successful season. I think to most Milwaukee fans now, Chris, you made it to the finals. I don't think that they will be viewed as having a failure if they lose in this finals, but at least for your Bucks fan, you've jumped over a lot of hurdles. I think this obviously would go a long ways in helping them keep Giannis. I mean, obviously, I'm sure the guy wants to win it too, but I think the Bucks have cleared a lot of we're not sure about these team questions for the Marshall Rorta's eyeball test. Like they've accomplished everything they're expected to and more this year. Now you're kind of playing with the house's money. Let's see if they can get four more wins this year. But I think Milwaukee, compared to Boston and Philly, who've been pretty much up to the same standards, are probably a little bit higher, but they haven't done it yet. Milwaukee actually made it there. It wasn't a LeBron-led team. Like, holy cow, like they actually got to the finals. So that's a monkey off your back. And now you can't be feeling as much pressure as they were, Chris, feeling when they entered round one facing the Heat, which was a bad blood from last year.
Well, I'll push back a little bit. Giannis, that was before this year about him maybe leaving. He just signed a 5-year deal worth $228 million. So I don't think he was going to leave next year or anything like that.
True. But, it's just nowadays, these guys, if they get pissed off, they can pull hard and say, F it, I want out.
He hasn't even started the contract yet, Marshall.
Okay. Fair enough. Okay.
Like the first one's next year. Now, 3 years down the line, sure. And my other pushback is you say they struggled from the field the whole – it was Young and Herter. They were a combined 1 of 12 from 3 – 2 of 10 and 4 of 17. If you look at Collins, he was 6 of 9. Capella was 7 of 13. Bogdanovich was 7 of 12. Gallinari had 13 off the bench. Reddish was 7 of 12. He had 6 3. So it really was Herter and Young who really struggled, to get it done there. But either way, like you said, I'm with you with the Atlanta. They got to be happy as hell. If they're not, they're just something's wrong with them as a fan. But they got to be happy as hell, because here's an interesting thing, though. John Collins really proved to be a valuable piece. And I don't know if they're going to be able to keep him, because his stock went up and it was pretty high. It was in like the 18 million to 20 something million range. That just went up, Marshall. And I wonder, you know, he was on the block March 1st, right, when they sucked. But, you know, and the Timberwolves were looking to get him. I think someone's going to overpay for him. So I don't know if they'll get him back. They do have Capella, who's really fit in there well. And then they do have Hunter coming back. Not that he's Capella, but he's a damn good defensive player and whatnot. But they really, the next couple of years, man, they have a damn good team. And, yeah, they're going to be knocking on the door pretty much the whole time. But yeah, just seeing the Bucks step up like that as a whole, that really was something, man. That was really something. And overall, like I said, the rumors were that it's a pretty strong rumor from a good source that they cleared him to play in Game 7 Giannis. The problem is, what's he going to look like when he returns regardless, you know? Breaking down this series, though, I checked really quickly anyway, nothing too crazy, but they had 2 1-point games this year, which I found like, Suns won both of them. I didn't go in to see. I know they got PJ Tucker late, right? Or did they get in the offseason, or did they get him like midway? I can't remember. I think they got him midway, didn't they? Marshall, you hear me? I can't remember. I think it was late.
I think it was a trade. Yeah.
So 125 to 124 and 128 to 127, February 10th and April 19th. That was the two games. Now, you don't want to get too tied up into that, of course. Sure. But that's pretty freaking cool, you know, just in general, how that plays out, you know, it just matching up, you know, Holiday against Paul, you know, one of the better on-ball guys against Paul, obviously super crafty, and it gets to his mid-range, hits big shots when they need it. Booker and Middleton, and it'll be interesting to see if Giannis comes back how early they go to try to get Giannis on him, maybe in the fourth quarter, maybe when Booker's right in the middle of it. Bridges, either against Portis or against Giannis. Crowder and P.J. Tucker, you know, kind of whatever there, because they're not going to be guarding each other, I don't believe. Ayton and Brook Lopez. Lopez is really going to have to focus on Ayton. And maybe if he can knock down some threes, Lopez, that can bring Ayton out there because he's been so solid. When you look at the bench, I mean, clearly Payne and Cam Johnson, I think the Suns have an advantage there. I mean, Payne has just been really, really solid just in general. If there's any kind of foul problems or whatever, if they want to go three guards or whatever, you know, I think they got a good look there. It's a really good matchup, man, especially if, I mean, it's not as good a matchup, obviously, if Giannis doesn't play, that's clear. But I'm starting to feel like maybe he'll be able to come back and be okay. Now, I do think, and we've talked about this the whole playoffs, Marshall, I think they got to get the ball to him down in the post as often as possible. They just have to, closest as they can, because he's not, maybe won't have that same explosiveness, you know what I mean? So let him dribble in and do his little hook shots and such. I won't go too further. I mean, there's some other things that will I'll say on the back end, but what's your thought process here before we actually, you know, predict the thing? But what's your thought process coming into this series? Because like I said, if Giannis can be there, I mean, this is a hell of a series. And you were talking about, we were talking about odds, and right now they have I think they're like a 5.5-point favorite, the Suns, right now for game one. But a somewhat of a slight favorite considering we don't know about Giannis to win it. But a lot of people were saying they actually would have been the favorites. And I remember you talking about this last week, the Bucks, if Giannis was healthy.
Yeah, Vegas had them as pretty much like kind of even money favorite, and the Suns would have been -120. So that would mean if you bet $100, you'd have to bet like 20 extra dollars to win 100 of profit on the Suns. So it almost a coin flip series in Vegas. So yeah, from a gambling standpoint, clearly the injury to Giannis leaned the edge toward the Suns, which makes complete sense. I think you could have asked a different person in a casino as to who would be favored, and you probably would have got different answers. I'm sure, obviously, Vegas was giving an edge toward Milwaukee, but it was a very small edge compared to how sportbooks operate. So, personally, I just think that when you look at resumes, I think that the Western Conference was more difficult overall than the East. I would give the edge to the Suns, but that's just, again, my two cents. And again, we're kind of really getting close to nitpicking there. Yeah, going into it, obviously the Suns are favored because of the injury status. Now, if he can come back, we'll see. Again, they've been really hush-hush on this stuff, just like there was like the kind of funny tweet that Chris B. Haynes from ESPN tweeted out that the night before the Suns knocked the Clippers out, that Kawhi could be coming back for the finals. You know, now who knows if that's true, or who knows if he was, you know, just running his mouth. Like, it's so hard to know stuff because these teams, Chris, really do keep things quiet. Or the other thing is, and again, I'm not saying Giannis is Kawhi, but a lot of these NBA guys now have their own different doctors. And they kind of do their own thing. And there's times where the doctors that the personal player has clears a person, but the team doesn't. Because we had that happen in this playoffs this year, too. So it just with Donovan Mitchell for the Jazz, we'll go back a little bit here, but I'll tie it all together. When the Jazz were supposed to play Memphis game one a couple weeks ago, the Donovan Mitchell's personal trainers that cleared him to play in game one versus the Grizzlies, but the Jazz actual team doctors didn't clear him because they had not been doing what was in the Jazz's name. He was doing his own thing. And so that's why really this reporting injury is kind of tricky, because if you're an NBA reporter and you're asked, let's say you're okay, you're asking Milwaukee, like, okay, what's the status on Giannis? The Bucks could simply say, we don't know. And that simply could be is because Giannis is doing his thing with his own people. And that whole ball kind of started rolling with Kawhi because Kawhi's not trusted the Spurs either. So just as I'm tying this all together, Chris, as I'm kind of going superstar to superstar, I say that because we maybe really don't know. And I'm not, and maybe Giannis is actually working with the Bucks, and maybe he is buying into the team doctors, but they're probably not going to say much nonetheless, just because they don't want to spread that information out, or you don't want to say, oh, he's going to come back in game one, then auction their minus game two, and then you have a whole media debacle on your own hands. But let's just for now assume that he's hurt a little bit and may come back. I think, though, the Suns are the favorite team, and they should be. They've been consistent as of now. The only big issue I think they have going into the series is Booker's got a busted nose. And I can't imagine how awful that felt when Paul George elbowed him in the same nose again in that final closing game. That had to hurt like a son of a bitch.
His nose has got to be feeling better by Tuesday, though, dude.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't think
that's an injury now.
No. But that's literally the only one that's coming to mind that I know. Like, Booker might have to wear a mask again, but everyone else in the Suns is probably sitting pretty good for a year of injuries of hell. So I always kind of like going one team and kind of team A, team B back and forth. So just look at the Suns. They have just a really well balanced offense. Like, we've always talked a lot about a LeBron team or the Warriors shooting threes. This Suns team, Chris, doesn't necessarily have one thing they do really, really well. I think you have a very young, talented bench with a bunch of guys that share the ball really well. And you have a quarterback who, when it comes down to it, has no issue just completely running the ship. So you have Chris Paul, who dropped 41 to advance the Bass Clippers, which was a hell of a performance. So Chris Paul is the leader. He yells at the guys. He gets the guys going. He can take over a game. When it's in the fourth quarter, the guy's going to make really good decisions 90% of the time. This is a guy who led the NBA a couple years ago in clutch points in the whole fourth quarter, and he was playing with the Oklahoma City Thunder, which, if you look at their roster, hasn't changed much from the 2 years ago when he was there, and this was the best fourth quarter team in the NBA with him. So when he has the ball in his hands and the game's on the line, he's normally going to do something really, really smart. So you have him. You have Devin Booker, who, in my opinion, has appeared to become quicker than he was ever before and is almost unguardable when he decides to drive. And you've surrounded him with players like a Jay Crowder, Ayton, who's about as good of a big as you can have in the NBA for elite now. That's kind of drifted away towards bigs. And you have guys like Cam Payne and Cam Johnson, who are these young studs who are pretty much playing Chris as good of a role player team as you can have. So there's really, I mean, you can say that Chris Paul, he does run the ship, but it's not like if Chris Paul shot the ball only 7 times in game one and the Suns won, you'd be like, well, that's freaking weird. No, because maybe Chris Paul was a distributor. They have a very well-balanced offense, with which on a given night appears that about 7 guys could give you double figures. And that's the DNA team, or the DNA, Chris, of a team that not most NBA teams have this year. Not many superstars, but a very, very well-balanced offensive attack.
Yeah, and everyone knows their roles and does it well. And, you know, they've definitely kind of, you know, figured it all out. I push back on the Ayton thing is about as big, best big as you can get, or one of them. I don't know about that yet. There's some pretty good bigs that are better than him. But yeah, he's overachieved based off what people thought of him going in. In early in his career, he's really stepped up, and he's just like, hey, I'm going to use my reach. I'm going to go straight up. And when they need me to score, I'm going to score. I'm going to be the junkyard dog. I really like what we've seen here. He hasn't been in. Credit to him, I guess, knock on wood for him, foul problems, hasn't been in a lot of foul problems at all either, which, you know, who he has matched up in some of these series, that's pretty damn impressive. It's kind of interesting here. So we know that the Bucks tend to like to pack the paint. But they do allow a fair amount of threes percentage-wise. You know what I mean? So, and if you look at the Suns in the playoffs, they are shooting really well from three overall. It's kind of funny because, you know, the Bucks were one of the teams that had like six or seven guys that could really hit some threes, and they're down a little bit. But Booker, even Booker's been kind of up and down, but he's still 34%. Paul's been 40%, Bridges 35, Crowder 37, Payne 36, Johnson 45, Saric 44. So they're not afraid of saying, all right, this is the shot you're going to give me. I'm going to knock it down, and I'm going to force you to come out. And then maybe Booker will, like you said, drive a little bit more. So that's a matchup that I was going to really break down some of those stats with the Nets, with the three-point. They're just okay from – they do kind of give up too many threes probably, and then percentage as well. But obviously they were missing some shooters, so it wasn't really about that per se. But will the Suns settle for outside shots too much? And I thought you brought up a good point, you know, with Booker, when he really drives, it opens it up. But, you know, they may pack the paint for that reason, especially I think they can pack the paint, Marshall, with Giannis in the game better, because then he can kind of go in between. He can be in the paint a little bit, but he can also be guarding on the perimeter. And you wondered even in game one, would they put him on Booker until the fourth quarter anyway, just to see how he's moving and stuff like that. And then are the Bucks due to shoot better from the three? And some of that really has been at times Giannis kind of in between, not knowing what he wants to do, getting the running start and everything like that. So I'm one, you know, that kind of some of those matchups kind of play in there. The Suns, obviously, like you mentioned, healthy and rested now, back to back series because of how well they played and closed it out and didn't linger it on. And their pick and roll their pick and roll offense is super good. And I'm wondering how that plays. And if that's another Giannis thing, if he's not out there, that's going to be probably more successful. And just showing you how serious this Giannis is, especially in this playoffs, you know, averaging 25 points, 10 boards and 5 assists, shooting 50% in this playoff run. And you got to have at least 15 games in one season to be in this stat, but it's Giannis, LeBron and Bird. That's who has those numbers all together. So, I mean, this is something here. The current odds on BetOnline AG, Chris Paul is the current favorite for Finals MVP. I figured I'd shoot that at you. I saw that text, kind of interesting. Yeah, man, I'm excited for this series, Marshall, but I'm also holding back my excitement because of Giannis. You know, if he doesn't play game one and the Suns go out there and dominate, then I'm like, shit, dude, if he comes back, we don't know. You know, obviously he's not totally healthy. Otherwise, they just put him in game one. See, being that he would have played Monday, he would have played in that Monday game. So it's kind of like, I mean, you know, based off what you'd assume, right? If he's going to play, if he's not playing Tuesday, then you're like, shit, he's probably not healthy. So I like the matchup. But it's just that lingering thing of Giannis, you know?
Yeah, and we could speculate on that, but that really does us no good because I already hit the injury bug and it's hard to predict it, and the teams don't say anything. So moving on.
We didn't think Trey was going to come back either, right? You know, I mean, who knows?
Yeah, and that text got sent out, or I saw it on my scores app with like an hour before tip-off for maybe 90 minutes. So you really can't predict that. So to look at Milwaukee's offense, which let me say one thing. You mentioned the pick and rolls, and then I'll get to Milwaukee. That will be interesting to me because I do remember, and again, going back a little bit here, but I'm tying these points together. But I did remember watching a game this year where Phoenix was playing Utah in the regular season, and Chris Paul was so good at the pick and roll, it literally made them sub Gobert out of the game because they were hammering the pick and roll so much. And I know that there, you can go back and forth on what you think about Gobert and all that defense part of the year crap, but the dude is, for the most part, like a solid big, like for the most part, okay? The same thing with Brook Lopez now. Will Chris Paul try to torture and abuse Brook Lopez? Because Brook Lopez is definitely not mobile enough, I would assume, to be able to get in the way of like whoever Brook Lopez is guarding. You know, Chris Paul is going right to that guy. Because the NBA now has become literally a pick and roll masterpiece, which is almost every team in the league now has, unless you're Philadelphia, because your guy can't shoot. But it will be really interesting to see. Okay, so if you're Milwaukee, who do you put Brook Lopez on? Because for the most part, all the Suns guys can shoot, so you can't really hide him. And if you try to hide him, Chris Paul is going to go over there and pick and roll your ass to death. And how do you handle that? That will be a really intriguing matchup, just because, and I know Brook Lopez ain't going to guard Devin Booker, but if you maybe got Brook Lopez on like Jay Crowder, a dude that can shoot, or if you put Brook Lopez on Ayton, a guy who has a little bit of a jumper, like how are they going to hide him, or will they play him off the court with a pick and roll? That'd be something fun to see game one, and then that comes down to the chess match between coaches of, well, shit, Brook Lopez is getting ripped on. We got to get him off the court. Okay, now that takes away a good score from Milwaukee, so it'll be fun to see how that plays out. But for their offense, actually speaking of him, he had a hell of a game five in Brook Lopez. And then you have Middleton and you have Holiday. So their offense, I would say, it seems to be a little more three-point heavy, Chris, than the Suns, especially at home.
Most definitely.
It appears, I mean, there was a couple of those games against the Nets where they were hitting threes like going out of style in a half. That team and their fan base has brought energy to all the playoffs. It seems like they have like 20,000 people in their massive parking lot outside their arena. That city's doing all they can. I'll give Milwaukee Buck fans credit. But so they're definitely very three-point heavy reliant, or Giannis kind of does his own thing. And with Giannis being out now, it's really opened up the court for Middleton to do his own thing. But he obviously is a little more of a skillful, maybe dribbling, pull up and shooting guy compared to Giannis, who likes to use his size, kind of just dribble, pass you, and dunk on your ass. So Middleton obviously is going to be able to score points from Milwaukee. I don't think he's going to get shut down. I mean, the Suns are going to play better defense than Atlanta, I would say. They have better defenders as a team. But Milton's going to – and the Nets. Milton's going to get his. But without Giannis, then you really do have, okay, so can Lopez and Tucker repeat what they've been doing? Like, this is the best defensive team Milwaukee's faced all playoffs. Like, normally you'd say – and I think Spoelstra might be one of the best coaches in basketball, but he definitely didn't have – the Heat 100% this year. So if you're Milwaukee, Chris, you're finally going to be playing the best defensive effort team. Milton's going to have to go off. But all those other matchups where you're playing a Nets team who is more offensive base and a Hawks team who's, you know, they're not a joke, but they're by no means a defensive lockdown. It'll be curious to see, you know, when they, especially having those first two games on the road where they're not, they don't have the Milwaukee fear the deer fans. Will their three-point shooting be quite as effective, or will the Suns maybe make them just have to try to expand or make other players step up? I'm assuming the Suns are going to try to shut down Middleton and say, all right, guys, if Middleton ain't going to score 20 on us in a row and a quarter, who the hell on your team is going to beat us? And if you're Milwaukee, some guys are going to really have to step up to the plate, Chris, because I don't see – and I'll go on the podcast next time and prove me wrong, but – I don't see Middleton having a 20-point in a row run against this Suns team like he's kind of been doing against the Nets and against the Hawks.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. We'll see how that goes. Just some fun facts before we actually do the prediction. I hadn't even heard this stat before. But for 37 straight seasons, a former teammate of Shaq's has made it to the NBA Finals. Now that LeBron is out, and this was a couple of weeks ago, Now that LeBron is out, that streak, it was coming down to Rondo, Danny Green, and Jeff Green to make the finals. And it's tracked, dude. It's literally tracked. Like, it's freaking hilarious how many different, like, there's even guys that, like, there's guys like Byron Scott, you know, who like AC Green, who played later with them, and just random stuff that you're like, oh, that's right, they played. Obviously, like Horace Grant, who ended up playing for Atlanta, Robert Horry, Ron Harper, Steve Kerr, of course. Like, there's just some crazy names when you look at it. But I didn't even know that stat existed. So finally, you know, they broke the former Shaq stuff. That's just a crazy stat. Another thing is, can we find a way not to make the last, you know, it's the last chunk of minutes, the fourth quarter, the last chunk of minutes of a game, though. We know, I get that coaches are going to call timeouts. I get it, especially in the finals, right? Because they're like, hey, man, who knows? Maybe we put a run together in the last 3 minutes. I get all that. It's been proven that you can do it, especially with the three ball now and the pace and all that. But the last 90 seconds of this damn game took like 33 real-time minutes. There was five separate freaking reviews. Like, some of these reviews, it's just like, dog, and they make a lot of time the broadcast team make a great point where you're like, oh, so you're just going to let that elbow go, but then we're going in to look at this piece of shit? Like, what is this? This is nothing. And I'm not saying piece of shit like a player, but like, it's like, guys, we already got enough timeouts down the stretch. Let's not, like, you want to get the call right. I get it. And, hey, if I'm the Suns in Milwaukee, extend it all you want. I want the right call, right? I get that. And if it was the Timberwolves, I get that. But, golly, some of these games, dude, it's just like we're going in again to look at this. And then sometimes they're in there so long, Marshall, and you're just like, what is going on? What's going on? But yeah, so we got a Tuesday. This Tuesday it starts Thursday, Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday. This is the first Saturday night in a long, long time for the finals. They generally stay away from Sunday, Saturday nights because it's the worst ratings on TV. So kind of funny, all on ABC, obviously. So it's coming down to prediction time. Let's stop beating around the bush. I would say this thing goes game seven if Giannis was in it, but I'm going Suns in six. Chris Paul, 31 points, 9 assists, 3 steals. I don't know. Maybe I'm getting a little weird there. But, yeah, I'm going to go game six or six. Suns in six. Right now, right, obviously, if Giannis is back, I'm going seven, but I still like the Suns.
And I think they will win it at home. And I'm going to say they're going to take care of business. Yes, they'll take care of business in one and two. They'll get blitzed in three. And then they somehow manage to let them celebrate in the desert. I'll take Suns in five. Little crazy, but the Giannis
thing. That would be like, crazy if they didn't have Giannis.
Yeah, you know? You're right. Yeah,
that's for sure.
And again, is he going to be the versatile, taking you off the dribble dunk? And you got, you know, because he's
two-way player the whole 46 minutes. Yeah.
And again, when he's on the court, he is so much of that team's offense, and he does it so well. But
In the back of my head is the Clippers took him to game six without, you know, Kawhi playing a single minute. So that kind of sticks in my head. That's why I went with six.
That's fair. And Reggie Jackson, that dude's gonna get a nice paycheck. I'll take Suns in five. I do have one other question because we always hit this. So this is the one point.
Is this about Simmons again, or what are we gonna talk about?
No. But okay. Normally I'm always pretty opinion on this, but Who do you give the coaching edge to? Because that's always a fun thing to debate. This one, I just think it's a little more trickier just because neither been here.
That's what it is.
I think most people.
I don't know. I'll fill in the I don't know, because Monty hasn't been here long enough to for my liking to say, oh, for sure he's got it, you know?
Yeah, because Budenholzer gets ripped quite a bit for
not
being the best X's and O's guys. So
I'd be curious. On the surface, it's Monty, you know?
Yeah. But that is always fun, because when we'll do our next podcast, we'll be talking about how, you know, adjustments are made, because that is one fun thing to do. Like when Kerr subbed out Bogut and put in eight, you know, like coaches make changes. Every coach makes changes in the finals that can lead to a team winning a title. So it's not, you know, the coaches, who's the better coach, can go a long ways along with the players on the court. So this could be Budenholzer's chance to knock some critics off his back, or maybe have some jump more on his back. And how will Monty do with him never being there? So that'll be a fun chess match. And especially if you are Budenholzer, okay, you don't got Giannis in there. How are you going to adapt to, again, like I said, maybe the pick and roll of death from Chris Paul and Lopez or something like that. So don't, you know, obviously everyone gets always so used to looking at player matchups in NBA finals though. And normally like Van Gundy and Jackson do a pretty good job of mentioning in general, but is, you know, how do you do your rotations? Because normally come finals, you're seeing a seven-man rotation with maybe sprinkling the eighth guy for a little bit, which is, I get regular playoffs, but normally in the finals, that gets even tighter. So which coach will put the right pieces in place and who's maybe going to find the right role guy to put in? So don't forget the coaching matchups, because that's something that can really direct the finals when you don't always hear about it.
And Portis could be the small ball. We got to get Lopez off the court, but then that'd be Giannis though. All of a sudden you probably have to put Giannis on the big man then. You know what I mean? I mean, Saric can move his feet a little bit. He's definitely a better shooter at this. Well, not overall, but so, you know, lately he has been, but yeah, I mean, that could happen. But then again, you're going to have to put Giannis on the big man probably. Because, you know, who's going to guard? So is Portis going to guard the big? Well, actually, what am I saying? Well, you know, I don't know. I wonder what the matchup is, because, yeah, I don't know. Tucker's out there, too. He could guard the big. But then again, you want Tucker probably on somebody to beat up. You know what I mean? So
true.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, we'll see if they exploit that Lopez stuff, which I assume they'll try to do early.
So any final – okay, so let's just – I'll do this one last part, then we'll be done.
All right, let's try to keep it under 50 minutes, though. We're at 47.
Yeah. Okay, well, if Chris Paul does win the finals MVP, who would you pick? I would go – if it's not Chris Paul, I'm going to go and say Booker.
Yeah, I think that's safe. I would pick Booker, actually, to win it, just because I think people remember, like, 30-point games and shit. And my guess is he's going to score. He's scoring like 27 to like Chris Paul's like 19 the whole playoffs. Sure. So, yeah, I think that's fair. Obviously, Giannis, you know, it's such an in-between. I would actually put Giannis a notch above. Well, I would probably tie with Giannis and Paul. I favor the Suns to win it. So the winning team's obviously going to get the MVP.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. Yeah, I would put Booker above Paul anyway.
Fair enough. Well, as Chris said, when these teams played this year, they were both 1-point games. Now, again, a lot of things change in a regular season and injuries and whatnot, but this has potential to be a very fun up and down the court, high scoring game. We shouldn't see many games in the 80s, like unless the legs get tired, but they got a little bit of breaks in there too. So it should be a very fun NBA finals. They kick off tomorrow. So as always, thanks for listening to our podcast. We truly appreciate it. We will be back as this series grows its legs and develops some stories. So until then, thanks Monday. For the support. Hope you enjoyed your 4th of July holiday weekend with your family. The boys are out tonight. Peace.